Okay. Well, I told this at the men's breakfast on Saturday, and I was not able to get through that without breaking down, so I hope I'll be able to tonight. If not, apologies. And hopefully it won't come out dry and unemotional either. So Bob wanted me to record this. And it, you know, the last year for me has been just one of, just a stripping away of really my entire life. Just layer after layer after layer. And it's been quite a trip from position and prestige and affluence to, you know, just total dependence. And throughout the process, I have heard that dark voice very clearly tell me, there's nothing you can have that I can't take away from you. And while I know intellectually that that's a lie, you know, living day after day, week after week, month after month with what seems to be, you know, contradictory evidence is, you know, it wears you down. And I just when you think it can't get any worse, it did. You know, I guess about a week or so ago, I'm a little hazy on time right now, had just another very heavy blow, just a relational thing, that, and just heard that dark voice again, I can take anything from you. And, you know, last Tuesday, I guess that's after Easter, I just got up in the morning, and I get up at first light, and I start my devotions, I sing to him. You know, I sing things from Psalms, and I no sooner opened my mouth to start singing than I just broke down weeping. I mean, really, real brokenness, and then I cried out to him like a little boy. You know, I said, "Dad, he says he can take anything from me he wants, and I really need you to show me that's not true. I need you to come through." And then just something just welled up in me, and I just kind of just let go of everything about my life. You know, just let it all go to him. My, you know, book projects and screenplays and production companies and my land and, you know, even living here in this place we live. I said, you know, this doesn't mean anything to me anymore. You know, the only thing that still mattered to me was, you know, family, home, marriage. And I said, you can take the rest of it. This is the only thing that meant. And I release it all to you. And I did, so I thought. And the next day was Wednesday the 11th. And I got up and was doing a little better and just, but I just prayed. I cried out to him. I really need to hear you today, Dad. I really need you to speak to me like a father, like I'm your son. And I was not anticipating a good day. I was getting my taxes done at the end of the day. And even with, you know, the big reduction in income, there had been very little withholding in what I had earned. And no matter which way I ran the formulas, this was going to be a very bad red ink day, and just was bracing for it. But I decided that before I just got into that, I was going to, you know, spend some time writing in my journal and praying and reading. And so I got out of the house, which has become just very dead and still, and I went across the river to the coffee shop and bath, and I did that. Sat there and I read and I wrote and I listened and just, you know, I watched people. And some time after 10-ish, I just said, okay, it's time to go face the music. I've got to go and go through the spreadsheets and my journals and my receipts and do the sums and just get ready to go for this appointment. And I get in my car and I'm heading up the ramp to cross the bridge over the river. And on the side of the road, there's this little old lady standing there. And I'd seen her before. She's kind of like a bag lady. She hitchhikes around. And I have given her a ride before. And I know that she lives way out on Georgetown Island, you know, 6-7 miles or so past my house. And, you know, I've got to go get my taxes done. And I'm just very focused. And I didn't get 2 car lengths past her, and I heard, could pick her up. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm really being self-focused right now. That's a good thing to do. So I shot across the bridge, and I looped around, and I shot back across the bridge, and I looped around, and sure enough, she's still standing there. So I pull over, and she hops right in the car, and I'm glad you came. It's getting real cold out there. And so, you know, asked her where she lived, even though I knew, and started driving out, and I didn't get much past my house, and I just heard clear as a bell. So talk to her about the Lord. And, you know, I didn't want to do it. I did not want to get into a discussion about Jesus Christ with a, you know, toothless person with wet brain syndrome. I just did not have the emotional calories for this. But I thought, nope, I'm gonna be obedient about this. And so it's not difficult, or it's not easy to talk to this person, but and I did little openings on the way and all the way down to her house out on Georgetown Island, and sat in the driveway for about a minute just giving her the word and just, you remember, you know, if you want help, you want God in your life, you ask Jesus Christ, and, oh, well, something to think about. Okay, fine. And off she goes, and, you know, I'm back in, got to get my taxes done. Back the car up. And I'm just rocketing north on 127 and crossed over the bridge to the south end of Arousic Island. And there's a long sweeping turn, and the apex of which is a big dip in the road. So you cannot see through this turn. And I come sweeping around this thing, and I don't know how fast I was going, 60, 65. And I just couldn't process what I was looking at. I kind of instinctively got the car stopped and went through the dirt and skidded to a stop, thinking, why can't I drive through here? Well, the utility pole was down on the road. There's debris everywhere, and the wire is still swinging. And on the other side of the road from me is a wrecked minivan that had just cleaned the pole out, smashed through the pole, knocked the pole down, and had rolled a couple of times. It was sitting upright with its nose down in the ditch. And I just looked at it. It shows you how far down I was. I just looked at it like, huh, somebody leave that there? I mean, I'd come through here like 2 minutes before. And I got out of the car, and I dialed 911, and I noticed the wiper is going on the back of the window, and I don't see anybody in this thing or any movement. And I'm talking to the 911 operator, and I'm telling her, it's pulled down, the wires are down. And she's giving me the spiel about, well, don't go near it when the wires are down. And what I thought was the noise of the wiper blade going back and forth on the broken window, I realized it was an infant screaming. And everything changed. And I heard that dark voice. It wasn't very loud, but it was, you don't want to go over there. I heard it very clear. But I ran up the road a little bit so I could duck under the wire. And I'm sure it was my imagination, but I thought I felt it on the back of my neck. It wasn't very much above me. And the whole right side of the car is just stove in. There's debris everywhere, glass. And I run around the right side, and I can hear just kids screaming. And the right side's all creased up, too. The right rear window's blown out. And I go up, and it's a mother and 2 kids. And she's out of her seat at this point, and she's moving around in the front, talking on a cell phone. I don't even know if the thing was turned on. I don't think it was. And the doors were locked or jammed, and I banged on the glass, and she looks right at me from 12 inches away, and there's absolutely no recognition whatsoever. I mean, she just was totally in shock. And I'm banging, and I'm yelling, "Unlock the door." And I'm standing there, and there's a strong odor of, like, brake fluid or power steering fluid. I mean, it's just the whole area is reeking of it. And something acrid, which right then and there, I thought it was the wire, which was just off the back of the car. And, if the cross tree let go and the pole or the insulators let loose, that wire was going to swing forward and contact the back of the van. And I stuck my head in the back window where it was blown out, and the little boy is looking at me and he's crying, and I said something comforting. "It's okay, buddy, it's all over, you're okay, and ma'am, unlock the door." And she's just banging around aimless. I mean, she's in shock. I stuck my head inside the car, my eyes started to burn right away, so I was banging on the glass again, "Unlock it." She's just not responsive. But the little guy undoes his belt and hits the latch, and he goes, "It's open." I couldn't get the front door open, but the slider moved open about halfway. And just then somebody else came up, another fella. I got the little guy out of his seat and handed him off, and got mom out between the bucket seats. And I said, "I'll get the baby." And it's a tiny infant in an infant carrier behind the driver's seat. And I go in there, and my eyes are burning, and my nose is burning, my throat's burning, and I thought, all right, the airbags are fired. I figure, it's the propellants, and, there's a broken window, and the door's open a little, this will clear out. And I go over to get the baby, and he's just screaming. He's like 2 months old. And the van held together the interior pretty well, but the whole thing was warped. Like, it was just twisted out of shape, and the seat was pushed up and out of shape. And I just went for the seat belt to unclip it, and I couldn't find it. Everything was twisted out of shape, and everything was jammed just tight as iron. I couldn't move the seat. I tried to push back on it. I couldn't move it. And I realized that instead of the burning going away, it's actually getting worse. And I looked up to the front, and there's smoke coming out of the panel, which is all shattered, and where the airbags are fired, and I can smell the fluid smell of the whatever it was, power steering and brake fluid and all that stuff, and I just thought of the fuel injection system, and I went back to this baby and just redoubled my efforts to find the latch for this thing. And I can hear, now realize what I'm listening to, is there's a hissing and a sizzling in the panel. And I just got frantic. I've seen enough accidents where the thing sits there and simmers and then goes up like a torch. And I just thought, I just said, "Help me, Dad, help me." And I'm working again on this seat, and I'm trying to, pull up on it and crawling over the top of them looking for the latch, and I can't find it. Everything is just out of shape and out of position. And another older man had come in behind me, and I just kind of see him out of the corner of my eye, and I hear this noise from the panel. There's like a pop, and a big puff of smoke comes out. And a little flame, like a cigarette lighter size flame. I actually blew at it like a candle. But when that happened, this other guy backed up out of the car. And I got frantic, and I just said, I'm not leaving this baby. And I heard clear as a bell that dark voice say, "This is where you die." Plain as plain. And And I actually looked outside the windows to see where I was, to say, okay, this is where I die. You know, okay, it's going to get all taken away. And I had put my hat over the baby's face to keep the fumes off him. And at that point, I reached down and I took my hat off him because I thought, if this thing goes up, as long as I can see his face, I won't leave him. And when I did that, something just like fell away from me. And it was, I guess it was the one thing I still had been hanging on to. It was family, home. Because I thought, this thing's going to go up. And I wasn't going to leave. I don't know. I can't quite remember. I think I said it again. I'm not going to leave this baby. And I don't know really how I did it. I stood over it and I pushed with my left hand against the far side of the baby carriage, the holder, the seat. And I could barely get my fingers underneath his harness that was holding him in the carrier. And I pushed away and I pulled up with all my might. In fact, I pulled my entire right side out. It still hurts as I sit here. And it was enough that I got a half an inch of slack in his harness. And I grabbed him by his feet, holding up on this to start working him out from under it. And the instant I grabbed his feet, he went completely limp and he stopped crying. And I thought, oh my God, I killed him. His neck was broken. But the instant I touched his legs and his feet, he like went to sleep and he got limp as a noodle. And where he'd been completely rigid and screaming, and it was just enough that I could start working him out from under this harness. And the further I got him out from under it, the more frantic I got, because I thought this thing was going to go up. And, you know, I worked around his clothes and his arms and, you know, around his neck, and I got him out. And his little blankie was on the floor, and I picked him up, and I wrapped him in that, and I got out. I walked around the back with him, avoiding the wire, and there was an older woman who said, here, give me the baby, and I just walked right past her. And when I had first time asked, you know, God, you know, Dad, help me with this, the whole time distortion thing dropped down on me. Everything went real slow and real fast at the same time. And I walked past her and I walked up the road towards his mom with the baby, and I handed him over. And the older woman was standing right there, and I just turned and I looked back at the van, and I just was so disoriented. I mean, the emotional and the spiritual whiplash was, and I heard clear as a bell, a different voice. It was the Holy Spirit, and it said, lies, murder, theft, destruction, clear, high, ringing. And then a whole bunch of stuff came, you know, somebody's name, a number of stuff that had gone on over the last year about thefts and lies and things like this. And just stuff I'm still working through. And then just like that, the clock ticked. It went back to normal time. And I just heard, I have to go talk to that little boy. This was a house right there, and a very nice older man had taken them in, and I walked up the driveway, and the little guy was on the couch, and he was shaking like a leaf and crying, and I went up, and I, you know, it's okay, little bro, it's all right, it's over with, everything's fine, you know. I just remembered being a little boy and all the chaos when I was that age, and, you know, how stuff gets planted, and I just said, you did real well. And he said, I took my belt off. I said, what else did you do? He said, I unlocked the door. And I said, that's right. You did really well. I'm real proud of you. And what's your name? And he told me his name. And I said, that's the same name I have. Only he had the Irish version. And he looked at me and he goes, my dad's going to come and fix this. I said, that's right, buddy. I said, but, you know, until he gets here, there's a whole room full of dads here, and we'll just hang out with you. And he kept looking at me real insistent. He said, we called my daddy, and he's coming, and he's going to fix this. He must have said it 3 or 4 times, looking very intently at me. And the paramedic showed up, and, you know, I talked to him for a minute, and then I left and went out. And, you know, my car was inside all the emergency vehicles, and I had to talk to the sheriff. Can I move my car? And he kind of gave me a funny look. And I said, well, I had trouble getting the baby out. And he said, he just nodded, and he's, you know, okay, fine. And I got in my car, and I just started blasting north to get home. I got to get my taxes done. And I really had no idea the kind of shape I was in. And I get home, and I thought, okay, let me run upstairs and get a drink of water before I go in my office. And I go upstairs. And I no sooner get trot up the stairs, and I just started crying. And I was just shaking like a leaf, and I just said out loud, Dad, I wasn't going to leave that baby. And I said it a couple times, and I just broke down, almost hysterical. I mean, 5 or 10 minutes flat out, just on my face. Wasn't going to leave that. I didn't even understand, really, right then. And I pulled myself together, and I got up, and all of a sudden, I saw that little boy, and I said, yeah, we have the same name. And just very clear, that was me at that age. And I said, you know, my dad didn't come, and my dad didn't fix anything. And I heard his voice, and I heard God say, you've called your dad. He's coming, and he's going to fix everything. And down I went again, even worse than before. And I finally pulled myself together, and I got to get my taxes done. And the phone rings, and I just pick it up, and it was Ed. Hey, Willie, what's going on with you? So I told him, and I don't even know how I got it out. I just was barely coherent. So I recovered from that, and believe it or not, I went down into my office and threw my spreadsheets and my journals and my receipts and got my taxes together and heading over to the accountants down in Wyndham, and, you know, and I called Jeff. So I've got a story to tell you. Well, come on over when you're done, because it's just right by his house. And I go in to see my accountant, and my heart's in my stomach. Of course, emotionally, I'm just a mass of nerves. And he asked me, how was it? And I thought, well, it's been heaven and hell. And he got real serious. He said, personally or financially? I said, both. Okay. Sat down, laid things out before him, and he got very grave. I just thought, oh, God, here comes another blow. I don't know what I'll do, but I'll get through this somehow. And an hour later, he spins the computer screen around, and he's going through, well, here you are, and here you are, and here's this, and here's that, and here's the end result. And he's got his finger on the screen. I'm just looking at it. I cannot process what he's showing me. I couldn't make sense out of it. I said, what are you telling me? And he said, you're getting back. It was thousands of dollars. It was a couple of months' income. And I didn't break down, but I just grabbed my chest and my expression changed, and he kind of, you know, rocked back, and I said, I can't tell you the strain I've been on. I can't begin to tell you what good news this is. And he leaned forward and he grabbed my hand with both of his, and he says, I can tell. And then I left and kind of poured myself into the car, and I drove over to Jeff's house. And I sat down and I told him the story, and I got through it. And I repeated it at that part. I said, Jeff, when I heard that voice say, this is where you die. And Jeff looked at me and he said, well, it was true. And I said, what do you mean? He says, you did die there. And I realized when I first come back in the house, that was what was coming out of me. I hadn't realized that I'd lost everything in that van. I had died. I went in still hanging on to that one thing, that family and future, and I lost it all in there. And I came crawling out of there carrying a baby. And I can't get away from that. And I don't still working through a lot of this. It's been a week now. My back's still killing me. And there it is. That's what happened to me on April 11th at 11:11 in the morning. It's the day I died.